B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town fame. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Hey, Murray.
Gasper!
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. Again, now at our new time for the foreseeable future. 10 to 1 here on 98.5, the Sports Hub, coming to you from the Town Fair Tire Studio. Good morning, Chris. You're all wiped down, ready to go.
Yep, all wiped down. I don't know, how long was that? Was that 6 minutes of me wiping down?
No,
like, literally 6 consecutive minutes of me just...
What it takes.
Scrubbing. Do you think any of it makes a difference?
Probably not.
That's what I was thinking. This is probably not saving me in any way.
Makes a difference for your psyche, and I think that's what matters most.
It's a complete placebo effect.
Well, it's just like you were telling me before we started. You ordered a mask. I, too, ordered a bunch of masks on eBay, which was probably me just putting money out into the ether. Those masks will never arrive. But I will feel better if and when the masks arrive, because now we've been told by the CDC, although just 3 weeks ago it said it didn't matter if you wore the mask, now you have to wear the mask. So the paranoid part of me is like, well, what do they really know, and why do we need the masks now when we didn't need them before? Or is this just a way for Big Mask and 3M to get more money? Like, whatever. We got to follow the lead of the scientists and the CDC, right? So now we need the masks. I've bought the masks, I hope. Again, eBay, very sketchy place. A lot of gray
area. You'll never see those
masks. I know that. No, I know. I'll never see them.
And if you do, you'll get them, and it will turn out like they're literally made out of like tissue paper.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Where did you get yours?
So it's funny you say that. You're going to laugh at me. So I after I did the show Felger and Maz last night, I read what everybody else read, and I was like, I got to get these masks. And I was like having the hardest time finding like where I was going to get these masks. So you're looking on Etsy and some other places. So in typical Chris Gasper fashion, I found a story on GQ about where you can buy masks. So I got a pack of 5 from Citizens of Humanity, which normally makes jeans. So I will have 5 designer masks on their way, hopefully.
It's beyond perfect.
It's like the perfect Chris Gasper thing.
It really is. Yeah. Oh, that he's fashionable and healthy. So, I mean, look, needless to say, everybody's having difficulty dealing with the pandemic. Some more than others, that is obvious. But I did want to start with this because there's a certain segment of society I would love to know how they're trying to deal with it right now. And that's your sneaks, your people that lead a dual life, if you will. Because it hit me the other day when I was driving in. I got one of my random playlists from Spotify going, and on comes Invisible Sun by The Police. Kind of a deep cut. Was a single. But either way, the song comes on. And with this, anytime I hear it since I was a kid, comes this almost Pavlovian response when I hear that song. Anytime since I was like 9 or 10 years old, because I was sitting in my dad's car, passenger seat, came on the radio, mid-80s, again, I'm like 9 or 10, and my dad starts like getting into the song, and he lights up a cigarette, and it's something I'd never seen the man do. It's something, cigarettes, it was something like my parents, for whatever reason, they were vehemently opposed to, booze, actual drugs, like, sure, don't do it. But like cigarettes, it was hammered into me, like, don't smoke cigarettes. Cigarettes will kill you. And here was my dad ripping a heater, jamming to The Police, singing along, and he's having a good old time. And it freaked me out. I remember it's still like I hear that song, Chris, and it's still like I feel like my chest tightened, because cigarettes were taught to me that they were the devil. They will kill you. And what was more jarring is I saw my dad for the first time have a secret. And it was only like a temporary phase of my dad being into cigarettes, from what I understand. Like, it only happened a few times in his life. But hearing it the other day, it had me thinking of that night from like 30 years ago, and had my dad like took me out to dinner with, you know, so he's out with his dumb kid, and before he goes home to his wife, he wanted to rock out and enjoy a secret cigarette. So it got me thinking, how in the hell can any frustrated quarantine dad even attempt to pull anything like that off right now when you're trapped at home? I want to know how the sneaks are getting by. Sneak smokers, sneak drinkers, sneak potheads, the ones who hid their trips to the now closed casinos, deviants, the one with the second family going on. Like, how are the sneaks getting by in the quarantine? the chameleons. Like, I'd love to know because it's got to be driving them nuts. Because I know the past Jim, sneak Jim, liar Jim, early's 20 Jim, who felt suffocated in a terrible relationship. If that Jim had to deal with this now, I'd be crawling out of my skin. I'd end up an alcoholic or probably in jail. Like, I don't know how people like that are dealing with it. And you know who else?
That's a good question.
Well, here's who else falls into this category. Guys kind of living a dual life. Sneaks, pro athletes, specifically NBA players. And the more I thought about this, because obviously these leagues are scrambling, and now we get word today that there's going to be a phone call between the president and the commissioners of all the professional leagues right around noon, and hopefully it'll be something that they can work out. But the leagues are trying to scramble and figure out what they can do here. And some of the talk in the NBA has been, essentially, like, they're going to possibly try to pull off the playoffs in Las Vegas in its entirety in what I would imagine would be like a hermetically sealed casino. And the guys can't get out. And you know how it is in the NBA, Chris. Like, of all the professional sports, the groupies in the NBA, like, that's a real thing. That's its own, like, that it has its own world. And well, Jim Jackson, the old journeyman NBA player.
Yeah.
Like, if you look up any of the stuff about the NBA and groupies, it is just a plethora of information, especially on YouTube. And this was something from a few years ago of him talking about, like, the lifestyle of an NBA player, groupies, on Colin Cowherd's show on FS1.
When I was playing, especially a little bit later on, there were actually websites, blogs, or whatever it is, where women set up where they would have, where women can go on and find exactly when you come in town, where you're staying. They would be at the clubs waiting. But sometimes it was, you know, it's bottom line, sometimes it was our fault too. Because what we go looking for as professional athletes opens up the door to have things like that happen.
In that league, and you've covered the league, and you've been to All-Star games, you go around, especially the All-Star games, like, it's its own world, man. Like, they're there. And you know how it gets for those guys. Like, it's road beef. You know, you've heard that term before. And in the NBA, like, those guys love that. And they get to get away, and they get to have their family at home, and they get to have their side pieces on the road. In that league...
Not that anyone's condoning that.
No, but just that's the reality of that situation. And in that league, if you're trying to tell me for at least a couple of months, some of these players, especially the more prominent players, you're going to trap them and seal them in a Vegas casino and try to play in the playoffs, like, I think that would actually factor in. Besides all the other stuff, the paranoia of getting the bug, actually worrying about your family and kids at home, whether or not they actually get the coronavirus, but you're going to trap them in Vegas where there's a lot of that kind of thing going on, and you're telling them they can't get out, they can't party, they can't taste a little bit of road beef, it would drive them crazy. I think that would actually end up affecting their play. It wouldn't work. It's one of the many reasons I'm starting to think the whole thing wouldn't work, Chris. So the sneaks in the NBA, professional athletes, sneaks as a whole, it's that segment of society. I would love to know how they're dealing with this right now, because it's even for those of us in relationships we enjoy being in, just, you know, being home every single day. We haven't really seen much sunlight this week. It's starting to make people batty. And for those people that lead the dual life, how the hell are they dealing with it?
Well, first of all, they're like, oh, honey, I have to go to the grocery store. Like, that's definitely...
It's only open till like 8. Like, and if you're out late, where are you... Nothing's open.
There's no way to...
What's your lie?
Yeah, you can't go out late. There's no way. There's no way.
But this... The whole thing as a whole, what the NBA is trying to come up with here, and them for trying to hold the playoffs, it's one of, you know, myriad reasons I'm starting to think the whole thing wouldn't work. But... I don't know. Are they right to still try to hammer this thing out and to try to, you know, continue these leagues, even if it takes a couple of months, even if they don't pick this thing up until, say, mid-August?
I think they are. But the one thing I'll say is they can't be taking resources away from the effort to combat the pandemic across the country. And I think that's the concern that I have. And I'm not sure how you can make sure you're doing that if we don't have widespread testing. If the tests are still going to be as scarce as they are now, then I don't want to see them wasted on professional athletes and professional sports leagues. I mean, there are people on the front lines of this, frontline medical people who can't get tested, who haven't been tested.
So you got your backup initially when, you know, say it was the Utah Jazz and almost immediately got tested when this whole thing started almost a month ago.
I, to a degree, I did. You know, at the time, I sort of understood it, and it did bother me, and I sort of chalked it up to what you said. There's a hierarchy of life. But now that we're more, you know, we're in this thing, we're almost a month in this thing, and the tests are still so scarce, it bugs me more than it did really at the time. And if I had more confidence in the idea that testing was going to be widespread and universal, then yeah, sure, no problem. You know, start up the sports leagues again when you feel like it's safe. But if we're taking away scarce resources from people that really need them, particularly medical professionals, then it's like, no. I mean, I love sports as much as anybody else. Like, I'm jonesing here. Like, this is tough. You know, I mean, I keep reading like, oh, the German Bundesliga thinks it can start back up. I'm like, great. They put those matches on FS2. I will watch
right,
them.
Just anything.
Anything. But this idea of sort of putting these leagues in a bubble without the proper resources and without the resources being omnipresent for everybody else in American life is something I just can't sign off on.
Yeah, the challenge part of it, I would like to see them overcome it just because, I mean, that's my stubborn, ugly American in me, I guess, is that, like, we've overcome, you know, great feats in the past, winning wars and being in wars and, you know, the Spanish flu from 1918. So it seems like it would be a massive undertaking. Like, the whole thing seems like it's a massive undertaking to get out of this hell. But for these sports leagues, I have no problem with them trying to figure it out. I'm with you in that it's frustrating to see that, you know, some of the players and professional athletes are getting tests before others, especially those that work on the front lines. And those
I mean, people who are, like, completely asymptomatic.
Yeah, right. So that's frustrating. But I'm not against them trying to figure it out. I think that people need the distraction. People need the hope and something to get the hell their minds the hell off of this thing. And I think sports would be able to provide that. I just, the undertaking of it, as much as I would like to see it, more and more you read about it, what would have to happen. And there was a story in The Athletic today from Ken Rosenthal on what Major League Baseball is looking to do, and obviously play in front of no fans, playing in minor league stadiums,
yeah,
mostly in areas like Arizona. And just with the constant testing, if they're able to do that, it would be a lot of work. But I'm for it, ultimately. I don't find it, I guess, distasteful, for lack of a better term. I can understand why people would, and they would look at it as frivolous. I'm just not one of those people. I think it would be important if they were able to come back here, any of these leagues.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I agree with that part of it. That part of it I agree with. I think some level of normalcy, and again, you go back other times in our history. I think World War II has been referenced before. It can be sort of a rallying point for people. It was huge to have baseball still going on at that time. So I agree with you there. I just think, in order to do that, you have to get to a point where you're not jeopardizing other people's health and safety,
right,
to have that distraction, to have that rallying point. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's great if you can flip on the TV and watch the NBA playoffs. But then if you happen to venture outside of your house and get coronavirus and the resources aren't there to treat you or your family because they were used by the NBA to be able to restart their playoffs, well, that's great. You watched those playoff games and it made you feel good. But, you know, now you're still in jeopardy. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
But again, beyond the testing and beyond the being hermetically sealed in a casino ballroom like the MGM Grand, those players that have been to Vegas before, those NBA players, and they know what goes on in that city, what's available in that city. How would they deal with that? The sneaks. There's so many sneaks. There's that part of me that would love to know how the sneaks are dealing with the pandemic. It's tough enough for those of us in great relationships that like being at home. Some people, I think, enjoy this. Felger enjoys this, like being trapped at home. In fact, he was saying yesterday, oh, no, going forward, this now means, nope, no going out on the weekends anymore. Tough wood, nope. Now we don't have to talk to each other anymore. 6 feet away. Like, he's loving this, like a pig in poop. Me, I miss ambiance, Chris. I miss being able to go to a bar, have a couple of drinks with the wife, just having the ambiance around, game on the TV there at the bar.
Well, this is what people without kids do.
But the sneaks, oh, the itch of the sneak. Like, how do you deal with that? Those NBA players knowing what's in Vegas, like, oh, man, I can go out and get these hoes, but I'm trapped here. Ah, crawling out of your skin. I would love to know how the sneaks. Those of you that hide your smoking, that hide your boozing from your wife or significant other, how in the hell can you deal with this? Oh, it's got to be tough. In fact, like, how can I tell this story? Like, you said, like, you know, you say you're at the supermarket.
Yeah.
I do know of a friend this week who had a bit of a dalliance with someone that was, this other person is, like, in a completely different relationship. When that person goes home to that actual relationship, what do they say? Like, where you been? Out. Out where? Nothing's open. driving. Driving where? You can't go across state lines or the cops are going to pull you over. Like, get the hell out of your state. What are you doing here? Oh, yeah. Like, how are sneaks getting away with it?
I'm sure your friend's like, oh, I was looking for surgical masks and thermometers.
Nothing's open. I heard that something was open. Like, I don't know, man. That's got to be an added stress. That I'm glad I'm the age I am. For all the suckiness of getting old, there's good things about getting
old.
That's true. You know, you get more comfortable, and you know, you find something you want to be with. Yeah. But like, again, young me, sneak me, 20s me. Oh my God! Thank God I am not that me having to deal with this right now, because I don't envy anyone that has like the sneaking going on, because you can't sneak during these pandemic times.
And just quickly, I'll say, you know, before you were talking about the Vegas thing, I almost feel like this is going to be like prohibition times. Like, there's definitely going to be like underground speakeasy, like places where people are still going and congregating.
Oh, it's already happened. There was a story in the New York Post last week about Chris, I was with you. I thought this was going to take time. It took all of like 2 weeks for that to happen in Manhattan, where there's already speakeasies and they're shutting them down. Like, again, people, I get it. Like, you want to get out, you want to imbibe, you want to have a time. Times are great. Love times. But, you know, we got to do the right thing here. Like, can you hold off a matter of weeks? You're having speakeasies and underground, you know, underground bars and stuff like that. Like, come on. All right. We'll be all over the place today. If you want to join us at any point, have at it. 617-779-0985. On this, I want to get to your thoughts on Chris Sale and whether or not that was the right thing to do. Speaking of sneaks, the sneak Red Sox hiding whether or not that surgery actually happened. And then poof, you hear that Chris Sale actually had the surgery. We'll get to that coming up next year. Gasper Murray, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We all know they're there.
There are
groupies in every city.
Larry, what do you know about groupies?
I'm a sports fan. I love sports.
So you know about the groupies. Yes, there are groupies in every city, but I try not to think about the groupies. I think about my relationship, and I focus on the positive.
You know what has the most groupies? Hockey.
Legendary broadcaster Larry King. See, he knows about the groupies. Talking with Carmelo Anthony's wife, Lala, about all the groupies in the NBA. Did you hear that at the end there? You know who's got the most groupies? Hockey. The NHL, Chris. They call them puck sluts. Seen it firsthand. Once involved in an orgy with Ted Lindsay and Gordie Howe in Quebec City. Diane in Sioux City, Iowa. You're up next to talk about it here with Larry King Live. Guy's just an old creep. Yes, the secret lives of professional athletes. They aren't going to be able to pull that off if they end up having them play in the playoffs, especially in the NBA if it's a hermetically sealed casino in Las Vegas. So a lot of sneaking going on. It's tough to sneak during these pandemic times, although the Red Sox were able to get away with it. As we find out earlier this week, or maybe it was late last week. I don't know. All the days just mushed together. I don't even know what the hell day it
was
anymore.
It was this week.
It was this week. Yes. Thank you. I thought it was maybe the end of last week. Either way, we do find out that Chris Sale did indeed go under the knife. Dr. Neil Eletrash took care of him with the Tommy John surgery. A lot of people were up in arms about this because the Red Sox did. They were disingenuous about how they handled this whole thing, like whether or not they were going to have the surgery. And then, poof, he did. About how it was handled, them taking away, you know, maybe taking away medical supplies. Did you think that this whole thing shouldn't have taken place because of the situation that we're in?
I mean, it's tough. That's why they kept it quiet. I mean, it's a tough sell. I mean, obviously, he's on the clock. He needs to have the surgery. The sooner he can have it to resume his career, you know, the better off he'll be, because there's obviously a 14 or 15 month recovery time with this. So I didn't have a huge problem with him having the surgery, but it is a tough sell during these times. You can argue that it's essential because it has to do with his career, but, you know, it's really an elective surgery. But you know that they, you know, knew that it wasn't going to play well. Otherwise, they would have just said he had it. I mean, the Mets came out and said Syndergaard had his.
Yeah. It's just, it's proof yet again that that ownership group can't own any of their difficult decisions. It was from the Alex Cora firing, which is what that was, but no.
Parting of ways.
Yeah, it's a parting of ways, which they just have to handle everything with kid gloves. And I think it's always so clumsy, and they look foolish and disingenuous. And this was the same type of situation. Again, like, just say that he had it, deal with the blowback, and I think people will ultimately respect you for it, or they'll just kind of forget it. Like, I understand why people get their backs up about this, especially when you know that a respirator was used here because he had to go under to have the surgery, right? So I get it. Like, all of that should be going to the front lines and people that are, you know, filling up the ICUs and dealing with coronavirus. I understand that. But I also, the cold part of me understands there is a hierarchy, and it's Chris Sale. And like Mike said yesterday on Felger and Maz, and I agree, Chris Sale's more important than Jim Murray. He is. And he's a valuable asset to the Red Sox. And from a business standpoint, and for them to get in front of it and to have him back as soon as they possibly can, whenever the hell baseball does start. And granted, he's going to be out on the shelf for a year. But if you put it off even further, you're talking about Chris Sale not pitching for years, plural. So it's distasteful, but I understand it, and it really didn't get me all that angry. It doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, the bigger issue I have is not the surgery. It's the extension they gave him.
Well, now I'm with you.
Yeah, I mean, that's my issue with it is from a baseball standpoint. I just think that they misjudged the situation. And look, that's easy to say in hindsight, and I freely admit that, because I was ambivalent about it last year. I saw the logic behind it, which was, here was a guy coming off a season where he was not able to once again finish at, you know, peak proficiency, and you maybe get him on a discount if you sign him. On the other hand, here's a guy coming off a season where once again he couldn't finish at peak proficiency and had a shoulder thing. Maybe you want to go just a few months into the season just to see how he does. No, maybe.
Right. There was no, it wasn't imperative for them to get that deal done when they did. So that was, at the time, I can understand why they would want to, considering they were, you know, coming off the World Series championship. But yeah. What was the harm in waiting?
Just a few months. Just see how he looks coming off the shoulder thing.
And considering his injury history and how he had broken down in prior summers, again, what was the rush? And when I remember thinking it at the time, and I felt like I was right, and now I feel like I've been proven right, is that it was, they felt the need to do it. John Henry specifically felt the need to do it because of how they mishandled John Lester.
Exactly.
That's all it was. They didn't want to make that same mistake again.
And so they made a different one.
And they made a different one. They felt backed into a corner because they foolishly didn't end up bringing back John Lester. And it was, you know, it's bad money after good almost, you know? Like,
They
botched that whole thing, and the timing of it ended up blowing up in their face. It really did.
Yeah, I mean, you go back to spring training, and you have, you know, Henry saying, when he's asked about Lester during 2019 spring training, he's asked about Sale. He says, I think we blew the John Lester. We blew that signing in spring training. And the reasons for that are pretty apparent now, which I won't go into, but they're apparent. That was John Henry saying that. And I think that really stuck with him. And he's right. And I commend him for acknowledging the fact that they did blow the John Lester negotiation. They did. They lowballed Lester. And the season went south. They ended up trading him. They tried to jump back in to his free agency. And they got outbid by the Cubs, but I think also there was a lot of damage done with Lester the way he'd been treated.
Oh, for sure.
And so I get that, but you also have to be able to look at every situation and evaluate it in a vacuum and evaluate it individually. And while you were wrong on John Lester, that doesn't mean you should sign a guy in Chris Sale whose biggest issue is durability. And looking at Sale and Lester and doing a comparison, Sale's a better pitcher. There's no question about it. But wouldn't you say Lester's a safer long-term investment? And I'm not just saying, I mean, just look at the way the guy's built. Have you ever seen Lester's, like, backside?
Aesthetics alone, Lester's the safer bet. And it's been that way forever, Chris. With pitchers, look at the ass and the legs. If they got a big ass and big legs, they're probably not going to break down as quick as a guy like Chris Sale who's built like a popsicle stick.
Yes.
You know, so that was just looking at the guy alone. It's like, no, wait, just hold off a couple of months. Why would you give him that money? It was so stupid.
Especially when in your uniform, he hasn't been able to get to the finish line pitching at his peak ability. It just hasn't happened. It didn't happen the first year he was here in 2017. Remember in September when the team went south, you know, he started to get knocked around a little bit. And then he had an 8.38 ERA in the playoffs against the Astros. Now, look, maybe some of that had to do with banging on trash cans. I don't know, but the evidence also says that he wasn't pitching well when you got to September, October. And then for the World Series situation, he had the shoulder injury. He made 5 starts in the regular season from July 27th on, and he was okay in the postseason, but he was not the focal point of the starting staff by any means. That was David Price, and he was really more of a complimentary piece than he was a centerpiece of you winning that thing. So he just can't get to, and it's not his fault. I feel for the guy because he's a really stand-up guy, and he wants to be able to honor all those commitments, but his body just won't let him.
Yeah, and I understand why he would want to try to put it off and hope that he wouldn't have to go under the knife. But ultimately, that, I think, blew up in their face. And this includes Chris Sale, and that it's like, dude, you're putting off the inevitable. And you should have had this taken care of in February. And had you taken care of it in February, and the same with the team, you wouldn't be dealing with any kind of this blowback right now either.
No, you wouldn't. And so that's his mistake. But I also think obviously the Red Sox made a mistake here in trying to draw an analogy between Lester and Sale. And I can see why it happened, because it's your ace going into a walk year, left-handed guy, you're coming off a World Series. There were some similarities, but they're not really similar when you break it down in terms of wanting to make a long-term investment in a player. And I think that's where they made that mistake. And I think if you go back, Jim, and look at their history, they've been very successful. The four World Series. My God, I never thought I'd see one World Series in my lifetime as a Red Sox fan. So you can't take that away from them. But there is a tendency, I think, to compound one mistake with another mistake, or to think like you have it all figured out. Because remember, when the Lester thing happened, that was when John Henry was on his big kick of, well, the data shows that it's not a good idea to invest in players over 30. That was a big part of that. And so it's like, well, now this is the magic bullet theory for building a team. And then they find out that's wrong, and you go in another direction. So it's like, we're not going to pay for players over 30, you know, because we've been burned on the Julio Lugos and the Carl Crawfords. And then you lose Lester, and then you go out and spend money on David Price. And you know, it goes back and forth. I just feel like the pendulum swings back and forth. They get burned on certain things, and then they go completely in the opposite direction. They go too far, and then that influences other decisions. And you see like a pattern here of taking one mistake and compounding it with another by trying to say, well, that was a mistake to go in that direction. So now we're just going to flip the whole thing 180 degrees and go in the complete opposite direction.
Well, I'll tell you this. I mean, I don't hide this fact, but, you know, baseball's easily my fourth sport. It's football, bit of a drop-off, you know, coin flip between hockey and hoops, and then precipitous drop-off baseball. But even I miss baseball right now. Just even the background noise of it, Chris. Like, that's how desperate I am.
We talk frequently. I know you definitely miss doing the baseball reporters.
Oh, terribly.
Yeah, I know you're devastated, and you want to do that as quickly as possible, and... You know, if like minor league, I know I heard rumors if the Korean baseball league comes back, you and Maz will do Korean baseball league sport. Reporters.
Sure. Why not?
Why not? Right.
Well, supposedly baseball does have a new plan for proceeding with opening day. We'll touch on that coming up next year. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 of Sports Hub. Gasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5 of Sports Hub.
Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Now at our new time from 10 to 1, as we continue playing games of the past over the weekends here at 98.5 of Sports Hub. So baseball has a new plan for proceeding with opening day and, for whatever they can get going forward in terms of their season. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic posted this morning that Major League Baseball, considering starting the season at spring training locations in Arizona or Florida, locations that have multiple parks in close proximity. Games would be played there without fans. Rosenthal does write, though, those in charge of Major League Baseball do understand that the notion of putting 30 baseball teams in one of those places and essentially quarantining them would be, quote, extremely complex and potentially controversial. But this is what the NBA has talked about a little bit, right? In terms of if they were going to try to continue their season or start things up again, or at least have the postseason, they would do the whole thing in essentially a hermetically sealed or hermetically sealed casinos, plural, in Vegas. So, all right, I get it, and it goes back to the testing and why are the professional athletes getting the testing and we aren't and all that, but I'm for all of this ultimately because I think that society needs some normalcy too, so sports would be able to provide that. But I think we're going to learn more today, right around noon, because again, started the show with this with the in the headlines that President Trump is going to be talking to all the Major League Sports commissioners at noon, and now Adam Schefter had tweeted all the participants who are going to be involved in with this this thing. Adam Silver of the NBA, Kathy Engelbert of the WNBA, Rob Manfred, Major League Baseball, NFL's Roger Goodell, Gary Bettman, NHL, Jay Monahan, PGA Tour, Dana White of the UFC, Vince McMahon of the WWE, you're fired. NASCAR, MLS, but no NCAA. Just on the surface of this, obviously we don't know what the conversation is going to be about. It would be fascinating to hear that. They're not going to air it, I wouldn't think. But do you look at this as a positive that this phone call is actually going to be taking place? Like, we might actually get back to sports here in some way, shape, or form in the next couple of months.
I don't know. I have no idea, Jim, what's going to come out of that call. I mean, we know President Trump is a big sports fan. He loves having the teams at the White House. He owned a team in the USFL. I was able to see him many times on the sidelines at Gillette Stadium. He's friendly with the Crafts and Tom Brady. So he certainly has a great appreciation for sports and what sports means to the collective American psyche. Maybe he's going to tell these leagues, look, for the good of the country, I need you guys to get back to work and we'll work with you and find a way to do it. I mean, that would not surprise me. I'm not saying that would be the right decision, but it would not surprise me if he were to say something like that. It would be really interesting. I don't know. I think it could go one of two ways. You know, either it goes the way I just said, or he's summoning them on this call because it's people like Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Deborah Birx who are saying, look, this, we're hearing these sports leagues are coming up with these ideas. This is absurd. We're not even close to out of this. We don't have the resources. They have to tell them to stand down.
What about this baseball plan, going back to this thing from Ken Rosenthal, playing these in spring training locations? I would think Arizona would be where they would want to choose. Or, yeah, I guess you choose where there's the least amount of the outbreak.
Yeah.
But if you were one of the players, would you want to comply with this? Again, with all the things that would have to happen here, that you'd be maybe away from your family for so long, the daily testing, and if you've read anything about the testing, how uncomfortable that thing can be as they stick a cotton swab to the back of your throat, you're like, ugh. Like, to do it once is bad enough, but maybe if you had to do that every single day, I would think that gets old. Would you want to comply with this? Because, again, this is your profession, and I can understand, as cold as it may be, that if some of these leagues start looking at this and you're reading that some of them are saying, like, look, you're not going to play, and we're not going to play any games, we're not going to pay you.
Yeah, like the NBA is talking about, I saw this, they're talking about initiating a 50% pay cut for the players. The players have countered, the NBAPA has countered with 25% that would start in May. I think the NBA wants to start it actually this month. You see overseas, a lot of these teams are taking pay cuts. I think it's in La Liga, you're seeing teams take 70% pay cuts, like Barcelona. So we're starting to get to that point.
Yeah, but the... Again, would you want to comply if you were one, if you put yourself in the shoes of any of these players?
Well, here's the thing, and I would ask this if I were a player from a collectively bargained standpoint, how does this work? Because what if I'm a player who just does not believe that this is safe enough from a public health standpoint and I don't want to endanger my health and I don't want to play? Are you going to say I don't get paid? Are you going to say I'm fired? Are you going to say I'm violating my contract? Are you able to compel me to do this even when I feel like it's not in my best interest? How is that going to work? Because I have a feeling there will be players who will say, I don't know about this plan. It doesn't seem that safe.
Oh, for sure.
And if one person has this, it's going to be like that. What's it? The USS Theodore Roosevelt. It's going to be like that Navy ship, where there's 100 people on it. It's going to spread like wildfire. It's the same thing. So if you're a player, if there's one person that has it, okay, that's great. It's contained from the rest of the outside world, allegedly. But if you're these players, it's not going to be contained from you. It will go crazy through all those teams. So how would you feel about that one?
Yeah, and it's ultimately, this is why the players and the unions are going to be the ones who really dictate this. The leagues can say, hey, we now have implemented a plan. This is what we're going to do. But then the players can obviously say, like, well, no, we're not going to comply. And maybe players, like, you know, the most... affluent and well-known players, especially in the NBA, someone like LeBron James can say, like, well, no, I've kind of made my nut, even though I would like to win another championship with the LA Lakers. I'm good. You know, I'm worried about my family. I don't trust this. Like you say, Chris, what if one of my teammates or someone else in the other team gets it? I don't want to do this. And especially in the NBA, too, you can understand why a guy would look at it and say, like, well, I already know deep down I'm probably not going to play the defense that I normally would play because I'm worried about the guys that I'm playing against. I don't want them sweating on me and breathing on me and all that. So that's what's going to happen. Even if any of these leagues do come forward and say, hey, we've got the plan, we've implemented it, this is what's going to happen, there's still going to be a stall because the unions are still going to have to look at it.
Yeah, they're going to have to vet it.
And figure it out whether or not their players are actually going to come
on. The other hand, though, what you just said actually is the most compelling argument you've made yet for the sports coming back. I can't wait. Like, first of all, NBA with no defense. I can't wait for, like, the first guy, like, you know, last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, the coach is screaming, why didn't you make that switch? Coach, I don't know, man. This guy could have coronavirus. I just don't want to get that close. You know, I'd rather give up the open shot, coach. This isn't life or death, man. It's just a game.
Yeah, I saw that dude cough you know, during a timeout.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not playing any D against
him. Be like, oh, Harden's really sweaty, coach. Don't you understand how much that dude's sweating? Like, I can't get all up on him. Like, who knows what he's carrying? That would be phenomenal. That alone, now I'm like, bring it back because I want to hear these excuses. This is going to be amazing.
Oh, you'd see games that would finish, you know, 152, 146.
Oh, it would be like the Doug Moe special. You remember when Doug Moe was coach of the Nuggets?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would totally be like that. Oh, that would be incredible. You know, like the whole Doug Moe, Paul Westphal deal. Oh, that would be unbelievable.
Chris has had an epiphany when it comes to Cam Newton. We'll get to that coming up next here on a long commercial-free segment. Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
He's the first overall pick. He's a former MVP. He led a team to a 15-1 record, almost a perfect season. He can't come in here and ride sidecar to Brian Hoyer or to Jarrett Stidham or just be a placeholder. He's going to want a bigger responsibility. He's indicated that on social media. I'll take it a little further. If we look at that quarterback prototype, the things that Bill Belichick wants in a quarterback, the very last one talks about fundamentals and the ability to have specific kinds of techniques. Cam Newton is at his very best, as good as you can find. But over the last few years, as the arm strength has gone, his inability to throw from consistent platforms and have bad mechanics is what leads to the inaccuracy we've seen with his throws. Doesn't take care of the ball the same way. He doesn't check the boxes. That's why I continue to think we're banging our heads against the wall with circling back to Cam Newton.
Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So that's Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, on Cam Newton, who is still an available free agent released by the Carolina Panthers. He sounds like he's all good with the Patriots trying to sniff around him, bring him in. I would tend to agree. Chris, you've had an epiphany with him. You were kind of wavering as of last week when we were having this conversation, took a fair amount of calls on it. But now you want Cam Newton. Why?
Yeah, I want Cam Newton for two reasons. I'll start off with my own selfish reasons. I just think the personality factor of it would be fascinating. It'd be a really interesting story. And I think it's going to be a little dull if we just have Jarrett Stidham, Brian Hoyer, who's, you know, great guy. He's great with the media, and some rookie QB who's afraid of his own shadow. Like that's not going to be interesting. And then just from a pure football standpoint, you know, I understand what Tom is saying. And I don't think Cam Newton is a traditional Patriots quarterback. But he is a talented guy, and he's at a point in his career, I think, where he needs to adjust and reinvent himself. I think the Patriots are at a point with their offense and their team where they need to adjust and reinvent themselves. And to me, that's a fit on a one-year deal. And people want to talk about, you know, accuracy and decision-making. Those are the two most important things for Belichick in a quarterback. The last year that you know, he was healthy, truly healthy, because obviously he wasn't healthy last year. He had the foot injury, which happened at Foxborough, and he's had shoulder problems, and that dates back a little bit more. But the last year that he played a significant amount of games, let me put it like that, was 2018. He completed 68% of his passes in the Norv Turner offense, 24 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. The quarterback rating was 94.2. The Patriots can work with that. I mean, is he the most accurate passer of all time? No, he's not. But is he accurate enough in their system? And if they made some adjustments for his ability to make plays outside the pocket and some of the stuff that he's done. And they know he's capable of being accurate firsthand because he's completed 70% of his passes against Bill Belichick defenses. So I think we're kind of selling this guy short. For me, the biggest question mark is not, is Cam Newton good enough to play for the Patriots? Is he healthy enough, right? And that's hard. So is he healthy? Will he last? Because it doesn't make any sense to commit to him. The thing I will agree with Curran in terms of what he said there is if you bring Cam Newton in, he's the guy. Like, he's not competing with Jarrett Stidham and Brian Hoyer for the job. He is anointed the starting quarterback, or he's not coming. But I still think that on a one-year deal, why not roll the dice? It could be a win-win. A la sort of Darrell Revis, right? The guy's only here for a year. He rebuilds his value. He cashes in somewhere else. You'd still have Stidham. And it helps you. I don't really see, you know, sort of what the downside is.
That a championship team? Like, what they bring him in, it's just a one-year deal. He wants to prove all the doubters wrong, prove the Panthers wrong for, you know, doing him dirty. Because that's basically how he feels. What do they do next year with Cam Newton at quarterback?
Who?
The Patriots.
Yeah, you can either franchise them or let them go.
No, what's their record?
Their record? What does the team do if he's if he's the quarterback and he's the Cam Newton of just 2018? And look, that Panthers team, he started 14 games, they went 6-8. So he's the Cam Newton of 2018 with Bill Belichick as his coach and Josh McDaniels as the offensive coordinator. I think they win 10 or 11 games.
Okay, win
the division.
So your concern is the injuries, and me too. Like I just don't know if he's willing to change the way that he plays. I mentioned
he has to.
I just don't know if he'd be able to at this point in his career. I just still think he thinks he's the Cam Newton of a few years ago, where he can still, you know, use the athleticism and take off. And I just think he's taken too many hits. And if he doesn't rein that in and become more of a pocket passer, I just think he's cooked. I can understand why teams haven't brought him in and there hasn't been that much interest. He was an MVP. That's 5 years ago, which is basically a lifetime in the NFL.
Yeah.
Ever since that Super Bowl, like, he did himself a grave disservice by not going for that ball on the fumble against Denver in 2015. And he's just taken such a beating since. I just don't think he's the same player.
He's not, and he can't be. But I've used this analogy, and I used it yesterday, Jim. He's not the same player, but it's like a guy who throws 100 miles an hour, and that's all he's ever done. He's just been able to physically blow people away. Well, now all of a sudden, he only can top out at 94, 95. He has to adjust, but there's still more than enough talent there to be successful. And I don't think there's any better place for him to adjust and adapt and change his game than here. And I think he'd be more willing to listen and do it for a coach like Belichick than probably anybody else in the league.
That first thing you said, though, that you could talk me into, bringing Cam Newton in for the dog and pony show that would take place between him and the media, that thing would devolve quickly. You'd be sitting there trying to get fashion tips from the man in those post-game press conferences, because he is quite the snappy dresser.
He really is.
Hey, Cam, how can I pull off a feathered chapeau? Can you tell me? Don't you want to talk about the game? No. Not really. Where do you shop? So, Chris Cam, Gasper, Boston Globe.
I'm just curious. Chris Gasper, Boston Globe. Cam, how do you tie an ascot?
I mean, that thing started to get prickly between him and the media in Charlotte. And that's Charlotte. And granted, there was a decent amount of national media there, too, because, you know, he's one of the superstars of the league. But I don't know. Like, here... And all the Vipers here, like, yeah, it'd be interesting. But
it would be fun.
I think that would get ugly.
I mean, it'd be great, because if they're winning, then Cam's going to stick it in the face of the other teams in the league and, like, national people who doubted him. If he's here and it's bad and, like, the local media is, like, on him and criticizing him, then it's entertaining because he's going to, you know, he's going to clap back. So either way, yeah, bring him in.
Jamal in Salem, you're first up here on Gasper and Murray this morning. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, guys? So I was curious what you think about this. And I know you had actually kind of hinted around something like this the other day, Murray, on Thalberg and Maz. But honestly, just rolling with Stidham, and then if it's a disaster, we get Trevor Lawrence. I just don't see why that, like, shouldn't be the obvious answer for us. I mean, if you remember what the Colts did, that's exactly what they did with with Peyton to Andrew Luck. So that's what I would do, and curious to see what you guys think.
Thanks, Jamal. Yeah, no, I know there's a lot of people banging the drum for win never for Trevor, or the quarterback at Ohio State. Justin Fields will probably go in that first round, too. I just, you know, look, I'd like it. That's what I would do if I was, you know, trying to play this out in Madden. I just, Bill Belichick's too prideful. He's chasing Don Shula's wins record. They still have too much talent on this team. There's holes. There's holes, but, you know, at worst, like, to me, a terrible season for the Patriots, if they were to, you know, have the full season, you know, later this fall, a terrible season would be like 7-9.
Like, I was going to say 6-10.
Okay, so around that, you know, so it's a difference of a win and a loss, but around that, like, they're not going to go 3-13 4-12, and you would have to be that bad, I think, to be the number one pick in 2021 and to be able to take Trevor Lawrence. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, the other part, and you mentioned this too, the too much talent, that's part of it too, but they're also, you know, kind of, this is another reason I go with Cam Newton. The rest of the roster outside of quarterback, and there are holes offensively, but work with me here, as Felger would say. Primarily, the rest of the roster outside of quarterback is built to win now. The offensive, like, look at the offensive line. You have two of the best guards in the NFL and two of the highest paid guards in the NFL. You have a veteran center. Marcus Cannon has, like, a $9 million cap hit. Defensively, you have veteran guys. Your team is built to win now. So it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me to have, with a win now team, to sacrifice another year, or in the case of some of these guys, like potentially a Hightower, maybe the last year of somebody's prime to get Trevor Lawrence. If you're going to do this, then you have to go all in and start peeling off pieces if you're going to do this Trevor Lawrence thing. And I don't see the Patriots doing that. So I would bring in a bridge quarterback, which is what they wanted Brady to be. And I think Newton could do that. And if it's, you know, low money, low risk, if he stinks, if he's disruptive, if it doesn't work, then you just cut him. Or if halfway through the year you're not playing well and you think Stidham's better, you cut him. And Stidham's the guy.
What about the plan that Ben Volen, Chris's colleague at the Boston Globe, mapped out just yesterday in the paper, trading up for Tua Tagovailoa, the quarterback of Alabama, who, if it wasn't for the injury, I think would have been the consensus number one pick later this month. We'll get to that coming up next after the Sports Hub headlines with some breaking news in regard to the world of sports and the coronavirus. President Trump going to be making a phone call with all of the commissioners. Tell you about that here in the Sports Hub headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.